And then when you leave the student phase of life, you become a householder. And in the phase of householder, you dive in, you raise the kids, you take them to hockey, you contribute to the economy, you do all these things. You are 100% householder, and you dive in with everything you are. And when the children have grown and that time has passed, you give everything away and you become a forest dweller. And the concept of forest dweller is now you've lived this incredibly rich life, and now you reap the wisdom of all of your experiences. And you take that and you grow with it. But it's not a time to be, you know, schlepping people all over the place anymore. This is a time of real personal insight, because you're not exhausted and you are well rested, and you've had 50 years of experiences to draw on. This is an incredible wealth of knowledge that you don't have when you're 18, right? So now you live as a forest dweller for a time, and you reap this wisdom and you grow in it in a very, very different, expansive way when you're not having to worry about all the worries of a householder. And then when you're complete with the forest dweller, you become a sage.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body, balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. So my guest today has not been on since episode 20 of the Entrepology Podcast. Katrina Boss is an author and all-round wise woman, and our intention for today was to talk about her book, What If You Could Skip the Cancer? I think we spoke about that specifically for maybe a minute, and what we really delved into on this particular podcast was the journey of the radiant woman. Katrina is a mathematician by background, and she currently is in Guadeloupe, having sold all of her life possessions as she travels around the world in search of the experience that happens when you surrender to the universe. I absolutely love the juxtaposition between the structure of a background in mathematics and the fluidity and flexibility that can happen when you start to integrate life's lessons in a strategic way. My conversation with Katrina was a long one, in part because there was not a single part of this episode that I could bear to do away with. It was wisdom bomb after wisdom bomb, and I can't emphasize enough how important this conversation really was. We talked about the journey that women go through as the student, the householder, the forest dweller, and eventually the sage, and the importance of embracing and honoring each of these pieces in our evolution as wise women and as wise people. We talked about the radiant woman and the divine feminine as someone who receives and someone whose energy and cyclicity has truly the wisdom to change the world. I can't emphasize enough how amazing and exciting this conversation was. It is always a pleasure to introduce you to smart and intelligent women, and today is no different. My pleasure to introduce you is to my friend Katrina Boss, and here she is now. Katrina Boss, welcome back to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thanks, Megan. So glad to be here.
I'm excited to jump in. You have a lot going on, and we were just discussing before we got into the podcast that we are literally going to surrender to where the universe takes us with respect to this conversation. And I think those are actually sometimes our best podcasts. But you haven't been here since episode 20, which means we're 96 episodes since you were last hanging out with us on the podcast. Can you bring our listeners up to speed in terms of who you are and your journey in an hour or less? And really, we're going to get into a few big topics today and a few things that you're super excited about. So maybe take us the rapid fire journey of Katrina Boss up until today. Go.
Since I met you 96 episodes ago.
That's right.
Okay, right. Got it. Probably the easiest thing is I've written two books, What If You Could Skip the Cancer and Tantric Intimacy. And I teach Tantra. I'm traveling right now and I mostly teach online courses, which I really love because it helps people really integrate the work into their day-to-day life, which is actually what Tantra is all about. I've been really passionate about working with women and the masculine-feminine dynamic and union as opposed to separation. This is really rapid fire. I feel like I'm like reading headlines or something.
It's all good.
And so that's actually been a huge passion of mine. And currently, my life has taken a very, very different turn. Back in November, I decided to give everything away, my home, my furniture, my everything, and basically downsize to a backpack and see where I was called. I'm almost 50 and I'm at a point in my life where my children are grown. I divorced 5 years ago and I really felt like there was something new to discover. It's like I could keep on doing everything I've always done and teaching and writing and doing workshops and all these things, but I just felt like there was something else I was supposed to be doing. And finally, after a bunch of ups and downs, I finally gave everything away. And so since then, I traveled in Eastern Canada. I went to Ireland, spent Christmas with my daughter who was living there, Scotland, Malta, Portugal, Italy, Ireland again, then back over to the States in Phoenix, Sedona, Bahamas, Florida. And now I'm in Guadeloupe down in the Caribbean and writing and teaching and doing everything here. And so, and really, I think the greatest thing, and it has a lot to do with my book, What If You Could Skip the Cancer, is being in this constant state of surrender. Like literally listening all the time, what is the next step? And then trusting that the next step, even if it hurts, or even if it's not working out like the storybook says it should, because it sounds very romantic to travel the world in a backpack and do all this. But it doesn't always work out. I mean, I went to Las Vegas once and I only lasted 18 hours, which must be why I forgot to mention that. And at the same time, there was really important lessons I learned in those 18 hours because I got squished really fast. And so it's a really interesting thing to surrender to that journey, to know that the steps will appear. And when you're there, even if it's really difficult, amazing things will come out of it. You know, like even right now in Guadeloupe, I've had a really difficult time because I don't know the language. And I mean, it's French, but it's sort of a Guadeloupean French mixed with a local Creole. My daughter, who went on exchange to Finland years ago, she's been like such a huge help for me because I'd call her every so often. I'd be like, Taylor, I think I'm going crazy. And she goes, it's okay, Mom. All exchange students do this.
That's awesome.
I'm like, oh, good. I'm glad I'm going through what every 17-year-old exchange student goes through. Perfect. And so, but at the same time, during that squish, like it's fascinating to be here having raised families and literally families and businesses and done all these things. And still when you get squished, there's something new to learn about yourself. And there's something you actually do expand in that struggle. And so that's where I am right now. And very happy to be chatting with you again.
Well, I'm excited to explore this. And I want to anchor that whole introduction to something. And then if I'm wrong about this, because I'm going by memory, then this ruins my segue. But was your training in math? Like, did you study math?
Yes.
Okay, good. So now I'm going to do my segue. So the thing I'm finding so fascinating about this is that I think sometimes we hear people say, oh, you know what? I sold all my stuff and I have a backpack and I'm touring the world and I'm surrendering to the universe. And I think for a lot of people, the immediate reaction is, oh, good for you. I'm not like that. I'm like, I'm a structured person and I would never do that. And I'm going to completely generalize here, but I have not yet met someone who studied math. I went to Waterloo, I hung on that math building, who didn't in their like foundation where they started have some element and love of structure and patterns and systems. And so, and you might be like, I never resonated with that, but I just think it's super fascinating that was also part of your journey. And for all the people out there who are saying, oh, I'm not like that, I would never do that, I think you'd probably be surprised.
Well, so there's two places I want to go in. One place is about the math thing. And the other thing is why actually that was so important in the What If You Could Skip the Cancer book. Mm-hmm. Because, so the first thing is, the thing about the masculine and feminine that I'm so passionate about is that we often think that it's one or the other, right? And the reality is that when we become a whole person, the masculine and the feminine, the left brain, right brain, the structure, the chaos, it actually complements each other. Like it literally feeds each other. So people who like give everything away and live out of a backpack and blah, 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 that's a living hell if you have no structure. Meaning in day-to-day life, if you don't have income, if you don't have some place to stay, if you aren't a logical, reasonable, responsible person, no one's going to let you stay with them. You're not going to have any money to stay anywhere. So the only way you can even be free like this is if you're responsible enough to actually pay the bills, right? It goes together. You can't just be accountant, logical, mathematics, and you can't just be free artist person. Because if you're just free artist, you know, blah, 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 you can't afford canvas and you don't have anywhere to paint. You know, it's all about the merging of the masculine and feminine, the merging of the right and left brain. That's where magic happens, right? I mean, if I didn't have the structure, so for example, I teach online courses. I mean, I work. I'm not just, you know, living on a beach, you know, eating papaya. I work every day. I just happen to be.
That sounds amazing right now.
Right? I just happen to be in Guadeloupe, right? I mean, this just happens to be where I am, but I still work because that's what it's what I'm here for. I'm here to teach. I'm here to share. I'm here to do what I'm doing, but it's within that structure that I can be free and I can be creative and I can do all those things. And the interesting thing about mathematics is just on that. Do you know that Einstein had the most heavily myelinated brain in the world? So like when your brain grows, you know this, I don't need to say it for you, but that the gray matter becomes white matter because a myelin sheath goes over as the brain actually continues to grow. Well, Einstein's right and left brain and the corpus callosum between it was so heavily myelinated because his right and left brain were practically one.
Wow.
Within the incredible structure of his mathematical perception of the universe, he also sat and pondered the mystery of the world. And he also expanded beyond what was known at the time. And it all married together into some of the greatest theories we've ever understood. And he was one of the greatest geniuses that we've, you know, it's literally, that's the colloquialism, right? He's freaking Einstein. You know, and it was only the marriage of those two things that made him a genius. Segueing into my book, What If You Could Skip the Cancer? So this is a story that happened back in 1999 when I was 29. And again, at this point, I really trusted my brain. I liked that logical part of me and society, especially for me, like, I mean, I was a child of the 70s and 80s where they were really pushing women into science, you know, and so I did get a scholarship to study math at Waterloo because that was a really, really important thing, especially for a woman. And so by that time, I had really been almost trained that my brain was my greatest asset. You know, this thing on my between my ears was going to take me far and wide and holy crap, right? So then all of a sudden, so of course, within that structure, you actually think you know the answers to everything. You know how to have a perfect life, how to be a perfect wife, perfect mother, perfect business person, perfect everything, because you've solved the equation. You know the answer, and we can hedge our bets about life and everything else, right? So then all of a sudden, 1999 comes along, and at this point, my children are 2 and 4. I've had foster kids. My mom died 4 years before that of breast cancer. All the women in my family had died of breast cancer by then. And I was 29 years old and I had breast lumps growing in my breast. I had no idea what to do because, you know, I'd watched my mom go through everything and the chemotherapy and the radiation and everything. And I already knew that that wasn't my path. And of course, this is the story of the book. A man appeared in my life, a guru, a teacher. He doesn't call himself that, but I do. He came into my life and he helped me understand what was really killing the women in my family and why every single woman in my family was gone to breast cancer. And one of the number one things that I had to do was I had to turn off my brain. I actually had to learn that my brain wasn't my greatest asset and it definitely couldn't make important life decisions. And that was literally, I remember him the first time he said it, I looked at him and I thought, That's like asking a marathon runner to cut off their legs. If I cut off my brain, I'll have nothing left. I thought I was ugly and blah, 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 all this nonsense. And it was like, if I don't have my brain, I won't be worth anything. And that was my greatest journey. And it was actually a very spiritual journey because it wasn't just about shutting off my brain. It was about actually transferring my trust to something else, or consciousness or God, or whatever we call it, that there was actually a great wisdom and that I could only access it through me, through my heart, through listening to my actual truth. And this is something that today, like in my, I have a course right now called The Radiant Woman, which I love so much. Because a lot of it is about teaching us as women to really listen again, listen to that inner truth inside. Because if we don't listen to it, nobody will, right? Nobody's going to listen to us. The men certainly aren't going to connect with their wisdom and their feminine and their deep well. And for me, what if you could skip the cancer? Like 20 years ago, that was really the beginning of me learning to trust something else. And using my brain to do the math, using my brain to do the websites and do the business plans and do all that, but to listen to something else to actually figure out what direction the ship was going. And that for me is a perpetual journey. Like that's literally the journey I'm on right now, is trusting that if I listen within, the next step will appear. And it does every single time. Yeah. And so the mathematics, and the fascinating thing, here's the thing about the mathematics that people don't understand, is mathematics isn't arithmetic. It's not accounting. Mathematics is actually a philosophy. The great mathematicians historically were philosophers because they were looking out at the world and looking for patterns. And they were literally trying to map God with numbers, right? And so what it does actually, being a mathematician, is it gives me greater faith that the world is much more interesting than we think it is. It's not just chaos, which allows us to take our foot off the pedal and relax a little, right? Because the world has it together. We don't have to keep pedaling. We don't have to work so hard. We don't have to be trying all the time. We actually can relax and listen. And that's when the genius comes through, right? That's always when amazing, amazing insights come.
There's so much wisdom wrapped up in that. And I think for people who are listening below the surface of what it is that you just shared, you can see the differentiation between someone who at 18 picks up their backpack and travels the world and is just like, whatever, we'll just see what happens. And someone who very intentionally is like, I'm actually just going to surrender to the experience. And both are great and both are important at different phases of that journey, but they are not the same. They're not the same journey. And I love this idea that you shared, where really it's this notion that structure enables flexibility.
Totally. Well, and the thing is too, I always giggle about it sometimes, because sometimes I feel guilty posting on Facebook that I'm in Sedona, I'm in here, and everyone else is back home, you know, trudging along doing their thing. But, and I kind of giggle to myself because I'm like, girl, you did your time. Like, I raised my children. I raised a lot of children. I was married for 20 years. I grew up in Toronto, went to Waterloo, studied math. I was a computer programmer. And then I married a dairy farmer. And I was a dairy farmer for 17 years, milking cows with babies on my back, covered in manure, you know? And then I opened businesses and I did all kinds of things. Like, it's kind of a fun stage of life, right? To actually say, that stage of my life is complete now. I actually now get to move on and explore something new. And so I sometimes have to remind myself of that, because I do feel very thankful a lot of days. But I think, no, my kids are 24 and 21 and off doing their lives, and I'm pretty happy.
What is happening in your life that you do that? Because I think not everyone does that. It's sort of the same as retirement. Some people just embrace it and it's like a whole new phase, and other people just, it triggers this like massive depression. Is it an identity thing as a parent? Like, what is it that enables you to be like, I put in my time in that phase and I'm embracing that next phase? Because I feel like there's a lot of grief and resistance and challenge and depression that a lot of women experience when their kids are starting off on their own journeys. It's like this complete identity crisis. Like what has happened with your psychology? To what do you attribute the fact that that is not where you are at?
In the Western world, our life is defined by work because we've come out of immigrants that had to work to survive. And we didn't live that long, right? You basically lived till you finished working and then you died of, you know, coal lung or something. You know what I mean? Like, so this,
well, that's happy,
right? Isn't that lovely? Yeah, that's optimistic. But anyway, we didn't necessarily live this long 200 years ago, right? Especially over here. But in the East, there's a very, very different understanding of a life as a spiritual journey. So in the spiritual journey, if we see the world like that, there's four phases of that journey. And the first part is being a child or a student, where you're learning and you're growing and you're being nurtured and you're being cared for by others. And then when you leave the student phase of life, you become a householder. And in the phase of householder, you dive in, you raise the kids, you take them to hockey, you contribute to the economy, you do all these things. You are 100% householder and you dive in with everything you are. And when the children have grown and that time has passed, you give everything away and you become a forest dweller. And the concept of forest dweller is now you've lived this incredibly rich life. And now you reap the wisdom of all of your experiences. And you take that and you grow with it. But it's not a time to be, you know, schlepping people all over the place anymore. This is a time of real personal insight because you're not exhausted and you are well rested. And you've had 50 years of experiences to draw on. This is an incredible wealth of knowledge that you don't have when you're 18, right? So now you live as a forest dweller for a time and you reap this wisdom and you grow in it in a very, very different, expansive way when you're not having to worry about all the worries of a householder. And then when you're complete with the forest dweller, you become a sage. And this is where you see the siddhus and people, the wise people in India sitting there because they've gone through. They're not just beggars sitting on the street. These are wise people. Like by the time I'm through my forest dweller phase, you know, I think I'll be really interesting.
I know. I was going to say, I'm not even sure this interview is going to make it to air.
Do you know, it's a very, very different thing because then all of a sudden you look at every single aspect of that householder phase as a lesson, as school, as a time of, wow, wasn't that interesting? That was so difficult. I really struggled there. Blah, 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 blah. And it becomes this wealth. Like I think every day I'm perpetually mining the experiences of the first 49 years. And it is really, really rich. And I think that's the biggest shift is for me, it's not about, like that time is complete. And now I get to really explore something brand new. I don't know. I think that's probably the foundation of why I'm really content in what I'm doing.
I'm sitting here like taking notes with great enthusiasm because I love that. I love that transition and creating context to these different phases of life and aligning meaning to these different phases of life. And I think that's so incredibly powerful. I had this experience. I'm totally segueing, but I had this experience where I was in the back of a cab in Phoenix, and I was talking to the driver, and I said, you know, when did you come to the United States? And he said, oh, you know, like 20 years ago. And he said, I'll stay for 10 more years. And then as I get older, I am definitely going back to Africa. And I said, tell me about that. And he's like, oh, like this is maybe the worst place on earth for one to move into your elder years. He's like, you have zero reverence for the wisdom of elders and your population. And he's like, it's frankly abhorrent. You stick people in homes and you occasionally visit them and you don't tap into that wisdom pool. And he's like, in my country, we revere the wisdom of the elders. They are the people who hold court over the community. They are the ones who, you know, invoke and inspire wisdom in multiple generations. And he's like, I wouldn't skip that for the world. And I thought, oh, you know, what an incredible one wake up call to me, but also commentary on our lack of social consideration for the wisdom of individuals as they age. And I see that every single day. So I love that you shared this piece. It's so, so perfect. I think it's a message we all need to hear. That wasn't a question, but I know you have something to say.
Well, and I do.
Oh, really?
I'm almost like on the edge of my seat. No, because you know the other thing about, you know, if you ever want to read an amazing book, it's called From Aging to Saging. And it's really a genius book about the eldering process. And what I love about this guy's concept is the problem in our society, again, is that we don't actually have a spiritual foundation of understanding the world. So if you don't kind of see the world from a spiritual place, and I know that's a weird word, so I apologize if it rubs people wrong, but
I think we've already gone to weird places. So there's we have no boundaries now. We just go.
Okay. Well, the thing is, I just don't want to alienate anyone, because mm-hmm. the problem is when we focus in the world and we think that the world is just simply about the physical world, and it's just about, did I get the new car? Did I get the beautiful wife? Did I have the 2.5 children? Did I have the, is that what I got? Then you actually end up living the same year over and over and over again, mm-hmm. right? When there's no imagining of spiritual growth. In Africa and India, there's an assumption that the point of life is not accumulating wealth. The point of life is personal growth of the soul. You may go through a time of paying bills and owning homes and doing all of these things are wonderful, right? They're all part of being part of the village, but that they're never the point. They're just simply the vehicles for the spirit's growth. Right. So then what happens is every single experience you have from the time you're 10 years old till the time you're 60 years old is an interesting experience. You look at it with a humility and an interest, and you pray. And so then by the time you're 60, you actually are interesting. You actually do have wisdom. And the problem is in our society, if you get stuck in the rat race of just, it's all about the money, it's all about the work, it's all about the house, it's all about the this. By the time you're 60, you've actually lived the same year 60 times. And a lot of what happens then is our elders, our older people, aren't elders. They're just stuck in their ways because they didn't grow through their experiences. They just got stuck. And so then suddenly they can't be a mentor, because a true mentor has actually mined the experiences of their life. And if they've done that, the humility in that person is off the charts, because every single one of us, I was reading one of Richard Branson's books the other day, and he was saying, you know, if anyone writes their life story and it's all just happy and all the great things they did, one, I don't want to read it. And two, they're totally lying. And this is the thing. If we're really honest about the things that worked and didn't work and all that time, by the time we're an elder, we would never give anyone advice, ever, because we know better. One, we know that we don't know anything, right? We actually know that. But the problem is, if you've lived the same life every year, if you haven't done your inner work, if you hold resentment for all the years that you had to work so hard and other people hadn't, you just become crotchety, old, and angry. Because the foundation wasn't about growth. And I think that's the difference between the taxi driver going back to Africa. Everything he's experienced here has been part of his spiritual growth. Mm-hmm. And it's a very different thing. And that's why I believe like the process of eldering begins like right now. It begins when you're 20. It begins that every single experience we look at and we go, really? That's fascinating, right? And it doesn't just simply add to our sense of self-worth or something. It actually says life is so wild and you just never know what's coming, and you think you can make the best choice and it falls flat. And, you know, and that's the real elder. And this is what this guy in this book said. He said, then what happens is our elders become true mentors. And you know that there are elders in our society because they're the ones that teenagers talk to.
Right.
And if a teenager will talk to them, that means that they are not judgmental. They've fully owned every failure and success in their life. And they will sit and listen to that teenager talk. And if the teenager says, "What would you do?" they'll say, "Well, you know, I don't really know what you should do. This sounds kind of fun."
Right.
That's the true elder. So anyway, that's a completely sideways segue.
No, I love it. Well, let's bring it back to something I know you are really passionate about, which is the radiant woman. And one question I have for you in looking at and discussing this concept of eldering and the journeys of life, do men and women move through those phases differently?
Yeah, they have to, right? Because for one, I mean, whether we have children or not, women are different, right? I mean, and this is one of the things that's really come to me that I sometimes get in trouble with, because with the women's movement, we got equality. And equality is important because it was ridiculous that we didn't have equality before. But once we have equality, we aren't the same. Women really are different than men. It's not, we have different gifts and men have different gifts. And when we come together, something really magical can happen if we can polarize. So when women go through these phases, it's like we own the web. We own the emotional web of everything. If you imagine, when we walk into a room and we naturally read the emotional radar of what's going on in the room. We know if someone's upset. We know if a child had a hard day at school. We know if our partner is having problems. We know all this. If we go to work, we literally are connected to everything. This is a really different wiring than the masculine, that sort of, and I know this is a wide brush because everyone's on a continuum, but the masculine drive that can just simply do one thing at a time. Because there's a primal masculine thing that says, you know, protect the tribe, kill that thing, go hunt dinner. So men can effortlessly sort of be single focused, whereas it isn't the feminine journey. It's not how, and we'll go crazy pretending we're men. Because what happens is we aren't men, because what we do is we become both. We need to be driven like a man. Like even when you look at our cycle, we literally are chemically different every single day. That needs to be taken into consideration, and not as a weakness, but as an incredible strength. Because the funny thing about elders, there's a lot of communities in the world that it isn't just that the elders are the wise ones, the women were. Well, if you look at native cultures, it was the women who the men went to for the wisdom to know, what do we do next? And wisdom is so important. And I think one of the challenges is if we become very much like men, because historically we had to survive, right? 100 years ago, we couldn't work, we couldn't vote, we couldn't do all these things. So we had to become pretty strong, pretty fast to simply have any kind of autonomy or sovereignty in our life. But now, and I think that's why I'm excited about allowing women to actually go into that depth again. Go into our wisdom, go into our truth, go into what we actually know is true, and share that with the world and share it with our partners and be honored for that wisdom. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a sideways answer to your question, but I think that's been our struggle, is that we've had to become men in a man's world, but now we have the freedom to back up and understand the power, the actual strength of woman, which isn't masculine strength.
Yeah. And I really enjoy having these types of conversations, because I see every day in my clinical practice the confusion in these concepts at the ground level. And what I mean by that is sort of exactly what you alluded to, this notion of like equality, and I should get paid the same, and I can contribute with the same level of reverence that men were always provided with. But I think there is still some struggle in terms of fully leaning into the fact that you can do that actually on your own feminine terms. And an example that I see, and I've mentioned this before on the podcast, but I continue to see it. So I'm going to keep mentioning it until I don't see it anymore, is women who come in, hint, hint, women who come into my practice, and I'm not judging this, but I think it's symptomatic of the confusion. Women who come into my practice and they're like, listen, like, I take the birth control pill, not for birth control. I always ask why people are on the birth control pill, because it's not what you would think. They're like, I just take it continuously because I don't want to menstruate. I don't want to lose. I want access to my competitive advantage in the workplace, which is not to succumb to, I'll say, hormonal innuendo and changes throughout the course of the month. And I always tread so lightly on this idea because I'm like, but that's your power. Like, one of the things we can work on together is stabilizing some of the hormonal swings that shouldn't be there, that are common but not normal, so that you can fully lean into your power as a female leader. And so it's really a fascinating conversation for me to have, but it happens with sufficient frequency that I'm like, no, this is a thing. There's confusion on the ground level as to how we are supposed to handle this stepping into equality piece. And I think that's driven by media. I think that's driven by, I think there's a lot of male leadership right now that takes it upon themselves to attack women coming into their own. There's a lot of pressures on, I'm going to say authentic leaders, men or women, to step up in a manner that's not bridging to philosophies. But I definitely see it on the ground level. I think we all need more conversations like this so we can really start to embrace some clarity around the concept.
So the thing about the period is, historically, women have never been honored for their truth and their wisdom. So you're in a relationship, let's say 200 years ago, and your husband can beat you, he can kill you, he can do anything he wants because we are nothing but chattel, right? So women learned a long, long time ago to shut up, pretend everything was okay, just keep the man happy no matter what, or else you and your children are out on the street and you're starving to death, right? So there's a deep training in women that says, do not be honest, coddle the man's ego, make sure he thinks he's okay, blah, 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 on a personal level, okay? This isn't what they're doing in business, but this is on a personal level. And this training still whispers in our ears, right? I'm a computer programmer. I've worked in a man's field. You know, I get it 100%. The difference is when we actually start to come into a time of honoring our own wisdom, and we actually know that what I have to share is true in a personal setting, that here is something that's wrong in this family. Here's something that has to change right now. This is the wisdom of the woman. And no matter what corporate America tries to tell us is important, it's all crap. Because bottom line, every single person wants happiness. And if you're not happy at home, if you're not happy in your relationships, if you're not happy with your children, your life sucks no matter how great your corporate job is. It's all nonsense. So the wisdom of the woman in the home, no matter what kind of relationship you have there, is absolutely the foundation of everyone's happiness. When a woman honors her cycle and she starts coming into the dark side before her period, this is a time of incredible insight. This is when we are in our most feminine dark moon personally, almost like we cannot lie, right? It's impossible to lie. The truth is right now that the tide is out. Everything we know that is true is now, it's right there. And it's when we have to share it, because that's the wisdom for the village so that the village survives. Our society is in such bad shape, mentally, spiritually, psychologically, emotionally, everything, because the women have to start being honest. And we have to start being honest where it's the most dangerous, at home, when we're the most vulnerable, we have the most to lose. And when we actually can be honest there, when we can stand in our truth, when we can be meditative and quiet and listen to that truth and share it with our partner and stand strong in it, don't just let it blow over, that we say, no, this is going to change. This is going to change. This is going to change. And if it's not going to change, then something bigger is going to change, which is going to piss you off, right? And when we start doing that, we don't have hormonal swings anymore because we're being honored. You know, it's like we were actually designed to be the canary in the mine shaft. We were designed to actually go, hey, 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 this is not okay. We've got to change this. When we start changing, because what I observe in women, and not all women, obviously, but a lot of women who don't want to cycle so that they can be driven in the workforce, a deeper truth is they are terrified to lose the stability at home. They're terrified to actually be vulnerable in the home. The number of people I know who are absolute corporate, amazing women, blah, 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 their home life, they are terrified to stand up to their husband. They're run ragged by their kids. They're trying to do everything right, all this stuff. And the reality is it comes back to their home. It comes back to their own happiness. And all the incredible need to strive in the workforce, I can't even fathom it, to be honest. You know what I mean? It's like, why people aren't actually just doing things they love, I just don't get it. It's actually, maybe it's just my weird life that I live right now, but I'm like, why aren't you just, you know, the one thing that's really hit me lately is that I'm going to die. I don't know whether it's turning 50 or what it is, but the reality that I am going to be dead one day. And I don't know when it's going to be. I think it's in about 43 years personally, but regardless, I am actually going to be dead. And so the time is ticking, and not in a negative way, in a really positive way, in a really positive way that says, Katrina, redefine your own damn life. Just because the corporate world says, here's what success looks like, here's what Hollywood says is beauty, here's what everyone else says, you're going to be dead and then you're not going to care. Why do you care now? And it's really that that reality that it's sort of like when your kids are young and everyone says, well, you know, better enjoy them now. They'll be gone soon. It's true. They'll be gone soon. My daughter lives in British Columbia. My son lives in Ontario. I'm in Guadeloupe, and I'm blissfully happy for both of them. And you know, that time is complete. But it's like the only thing we actually have of any value in our life is time, which is why I get extremely pissed off if someone wastes it, right? It's actually more than money or anything else, because it's like, hey, I've only got a few more years left. Don't waste my time. So the idea of busting your ass, doing something simply to achieve something in a world that you're not even passionate about, and literally skipping your own wisdom cycle in order to achieve it, I can't even fathom it. Just can't even fathom it. It just is beyond me.
You know what's so cool about this is I know there's people sitting there and they're driving or they're working out or they're doing whatever, and they're having this moment where they're like, oh shit. Because there's so much truth in that. I had my first like mortality moment 5 minutes after my first daughter was born, where I felt like it was like this weird threshold I crossed where I was like, oh, like you're never in that phase again. Like it was very distinct for me. And I feel like I thought about my own mortality every day, not in a morbid sense, but with that same acknowledgement of the fact that my time is my most precious. My most precious asset. And I can figure out how to make more money. I think we kind of get confused on those two assets, but time, don't steal that. Don't steal it from me. Don't steal it so that you're preventing me from hanging out with my kids and giving them time. Like don't steal time from me. And my intention around things that I put out into this world now are really about how can I maximize and leverage my time so that I can share my gifts most efficiently, so I can be with the people that I love. My primary motivation is not money. It's time leveraging. And I love that you shared that, because I think one of the things that we sometimes lose sight of is we get caught in the doing of life and we don't stop and actually acknowledge the intention behind what it is that we are doing. And sometimes that's the easiest triage question of all. Why am I actually doing that? And your answer matters, because sometimes it means it's not worth bringing it to completion. And sometimes the intention's really powerful and it's worth the time and the energy and the fatigue and all of those pieces. But I really value the fact that I can do this from a place that is rooted in that feminine wisdom. Again, not a question.
Oh, and it changes everything, right? It changes everything, because when we act out of our feminine wisdom. Magic happens. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what changed for me with my experience with What If You Could Skip the Cancer, is because, and that's really what the book's about. Like, after the book, it's funny, right? Like, that was what we were actually going to talk about, but not really. But I think, and it's funny because the book actually, it's out now in like ebook and audiobook and all that now, because it's actually bigger now than it was back in 2009 when it first came out, because I think we're ready for it. I think the world is actually ready to actually step back and say, wait a minute. Okay, I'm equal. I can be a computer programmer. I now can do anything a guy can do. Now I have a choice. And again, just because you're a computer programmer or a yoga teacher, this isn't a masculine, feminine thing. It's just what you're interested in. It's not a gender thing. It's not masculine, feminine. It's none of that. It's just, if that's what floats your boat, then do it and just get on with your life, right? So the reason I wrote the book was because I had a miraculous healing. The lumps came out the side of my breasts. Like, my breasts now are like completely healed and perfect 20 years later. Everything's mint. And people always said to me, they said, oh my God, Katrina, tell me what you did. Because it's like, I want the equation, you know, how much broccoli, how much yoga, how much this, how much meditation, like what, right? And the key is that there is no equation, right? Because how my Rubik's Cube got twisted is different than how your Rubik's Cube got twisted. So the key is actually accessing that deep wisdom, listening, and then trusting that, is that the next step? Then I'll do that. And the most amazing thing that changed my mathematical way of understanding the world and that driven place and working in a man's world and all that is that when I started listening, because of course I had massive mortality moments, right, during that time. And when I started listening inside, absolute miracles started happening around me. And I don't mean that in a weird, flaky way. I mean it's like you start to understand that no matter how intelligent you are, your brain is limited. It is just a computer. It is just a storage unit. And when you realize that it's limited, and there's actually infinite potential that we can access if we can set our brain aside, the things that would happen in my life, like literally I would just think something and it would just happen. Like, I used to own this train station in Goderich, and I renovated it into a wellness center where I taught yoga and tantra and dance and all these kind of things. And I sold that like in 2015 or 14 or something. And one day, I used to host kids camps there. And one day this woman walks in and she says, do you have anything for kids who juggle, to learn how to juggle? And I'm looking at her thinking, wow, that's the strangest request I've ever had. And the next 2 days later, I was teaching meditation at a retreat for drama students. And I'm standing there waiting for my check. And this clown walks up to me, literally a clown walked up to me and said, hey, Katrina, I hear that you have kids camps at the train station. And I looked at her and I said, do you know how to juggle? And she said, yeah. I said, do you want to teach a clown camp at my train station this summer? She goes, oh, I'm on mat leave. I've missed the kids. I would love to do that. You know, you have enough things like that happen in your life that you really start to understand that the world is so much bigger than our little brain. Mm-hmm. Right? And so literally after this would happen, my kids, things would happen. Amazing things would happen. They wouldn't even blink. They just go, yeah, that always happens in mom's world. Yeah, that's just, people used to call it Katrina's world. That's why my email list is called Katrina's world, because it's like, this is what I believe so incredibly deeply, that when we can do both, when we can use our brains to kind of do the math and manifest whatever we want, but the first call is within and listening to whatever our soul is really desiring, absolute miracles can happen. And it's so much bigger than anything we ever could have imagined.
I want to be part of Katrina's world.
You are.
Yes. And before we transition into the last component of the interview, like, very selfishly, I want to know a little bit more about your online course, The Radiant Woman. Did I get that right? Probably not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
got it right. Yeah, like, just, I want to know, because I'm like, I want more of that stuff. Can you just share with us the essence of what it's all about?
Yeah. So the foundation of it is redefining the masculine and feminine for union. Because the masculine and feminine in the world right now, if you imagine that we've always interacted in separation, so then the masculine, we always interact positive, negative, masculine, feminine. We're in a duality here. This is a bigger conversation, but we're in a dual world where we interact with each other. Like I'm talking to you, you're listening, you know, this is how we interact. So we always do this, but when we're in separation, the masculine overpowers the feminine, or the masculine, you know, gives what the feminine doesn't want, or whatever kind of thing. When we actually come into a time of union, which is what I believe we all deeply desire, we desire it with our children, we desire it with our friends, we desire it with our partner, intimacy, sexually. In union, the masculine and feminine are very, very different, and they completely play with each other. They're not just he takes out the laundry and she, you know, cooks or something. The energies are completely different. And so, for example, the whole course goes into really, first of all, redefining the masculine and feminine, because it's not always gendered, but in relationships and in same-sex and heterosexual, but I focus heterosexually just for ease. For example, in intimacy, giving and receiving. For women to actually receive is such a huge deal, because we have so many walls up because we have been given things we didn't want for our whole life. It's not that we struggle to receive. We just haven't received anything we wanted. And we have all this, I mean, it's a huge, huge topic, just simply learning to receive. Because when we learn to receive, our beings, like sexually, relax into a place where our nervous systems actually can become multi-orgasmic. And what's fascinating about men learning to give is some men are like, well, how about me? When men actually learn to give and they actually are received completely, they become the powerful, amazing men that they really want to be. So that there's that dynamic of giving and receiving. The dynamic of vulnerability and protector. And that's a really interesting thing, because again, women have really struggled to become vulnerable. And we can do it with friends, we can do it all with all kinds of things. But even then we can't, because we've become so incredibly disconnected masculine. We just try to fix everybody's problems. We don't actually just hold space for someone to be complete chaos and crazy, right? And so for us to actually learn to delve into our deep vulnerability, we actually strengthen our own protector, and we actually become strong and deep and interesting. Being able to go into all of these different dynamics, and that's really what the course is about, is looking at all the ways the masculine and feminine are actually in total union. And when we come into total union, we come into oneness, which is bliss, which is happiness. And it is beyond anything we can really experience, right? The lovemaking changes completely, and there's no tricks about it. It just actually allows us to come into full union. And when a woman fully polarizes into that feminine, that deep wisdom, that deep receptive Mother Earth, whatever, however you want to see it, everything changes. I'm telling you, at a very deep level, we become so happy and so content and so blissful. We have no needs. We have no nothing. We are completely whole. And when we are that, the reason of the radiant woman is such so important to me is because the reality is, in the masculine feminine dynamic, the masculine energy acts upon the feminine. It reads the feminine. So the giver can only know what to give by reading the feminine. And that could be simply like looking at a child, and the child is the feminine because they're the vulnerable. And you look at them and you say, what would you like to eat? And you give them what they want to eat. And then the child looks at you and says, oh my God, mommy, I love you so much. As opposed to the child saying, what I really want is this. And you say, you know what you're going to get? You're going to get lentils, because that's what's good for you. Maybe the child ate, but there's no union there. You know, the child, like, you know, and that's really where it goes. But the challenge is, if the women are messed up, right? If we are literally walking chaos, and not in a good way, because chaos is really awesome in a good way, but if we're just really completely messed up, the men cannot read us. The masculine energy cannot read us. So the bottom line is, we have to become whole first. And when the women become whole, everything changes. It's like, I have a beautiful man in Canada who I keep out of social media and everything, so no one really knows about him. It's a secret. But
I won't tell. And no one listens.
Luckily. But so what's really fascinating, he is the most amazing lover I've ever had. Like, I swear to God, part of that is how I can travel and be completely content because I'm so well loved in every single way. When I began creating the men's course, I said, what advice would you give men to become the kind of lover you are? And he looked at me and he says, I'm not. He says, I just read you. And this, in my opinion, is the most incredibly powerful thing, because when we become easy to read, when we are whole, when we are happy, when we are content, we are so effortless to be with. And it's just everything works better. It doesn't start with the men. It's kind of like Mother Earth. If you imagine Mother Earth and she's messed up, right? The water is filthy. The trees are cut down, blah, blah, blah. You can't build a house and you can't live here. But as Mother Earth heals, everything changes. And that's what the Radiant Woman's all about. Because as each one of us shifts, the ripple effect is immense, because we hold the web, right? It's not just that we receive information. We affect every single person around us, like in ways that we can never even fathom, you know? And so when we heal, and this is why I am just so passionate about it. And every woman that's gone through it is like, oh my God, Katrina, this is like so exciting. And so I've got people taking it from Kuwait and India and South Africa. And it's just amazing I just feel like there's all these little acupuncture points going all over the world. And personally, it's my own journey, right? Because this is the world right now. We are shifting into this desire for union, this redefinition of the masculine and feminine. So I'm right along with the whole journey with all the women taking it.
Well, and I resonate so deeply with all the words that you are saying. I perked up a little bit when you said multi-orgasmic, but I really do believe in what you're saying. And it's funny because the universe gives you what you need, usually in rapid succession. And I was at an event a few months ago and someone was talking about the exact same idea. And I happened to walk back into the room at the same point. And we all have work to do. And I love that has been dropped in front of me on numerous occasions. So you'll see me in there at some point. At the end of the day, it really is all about your brain and what you do with it. It is the most amazing supercomputer that you have access to. And yet we spend so little time making sure that we are giving it the things it needs so that it can serve us on our mission-driven journey. We have questions that we always ask people when they're sitting in our office so we can get insight in terms of how well someone's brain is actually serving the work that they do. And we decided to take this knowledge and take this line of questioning and hand it off to you. We've created a quiz for you and you can find it at anthropologyperformancelabs.com/brain quiz, where we start to provide you with the insight of smarter questions with respect to how your brain is functioning on a daily basis. If you want to get your hands on these awesome nuggets of knowledge, head on over to anthropologyperformancelabs.com/brain quiz and get started today. I want to twist the table a little bit, Katrina. I want to throw a few rapid fire questions your way as we transition into the last little bit of the interview, because I want to get a really quick sense of some of the things that are exciting you right now. You ready?
Okay. I'm all in, but I hope we have time, because I do have one other thing to talk about, the multi-orgasmic thing, because I think I want to share it with you, but I'm all in for the rapid fire.
Okay. Okay. Well then throw it in the first question of the rapid fire. You'll see where we can bring it. We can bring it together. What or who is inspiring you right now? Insert multi-orgasmic here.
Oh, this is awesome. Okay. Well, right now, Megan is, because she's asking me this great question, because I want to talk about this for a minute.
Boom. Okay.
This is totally not answering your question. But in the whole union thing, in the masculine-feminine thing, we have this idea that women are multi-orgasmic and men are singularly orgasmic, right? And this is So my real passion is, like, my other passion is Tantra, right? Because of course it's all the same thing. And so in my second book, Tantric Intimacy, I talk about this a lot, but the key in union, right? Again, even the idea that men have one orgasm and women have many, this is only in separation. This is when you sort of co-masturbate together, right? They do this to you, you do this to them, but it's all making love in separation. If you actually polarize, the woman becomes completely feminine, the masculine becomes completely masculine, a dance happens and a dynamic happens in the lovemaking that you actually merge. And I mean this absolutely literally. You lose track of the bodies, you absolutely go into timelessness. And what happens is the energy of the masculine energizes the feminine, like lightning hitting the earth. And that masculine energy moves through the feminine and you share an orgasmic state together. It's not about the singularly orgasmic thing. It's just for procreation and getting, having babies. What the humans are designed for is full merging so that the masculine energizes that multi-orgasmic potential of the feminine. And then you ride that wave together. Okay.
Just slip that in there.
Yeah.
What is your audacious goal for the next year?
Wow.
Oh, we stopped her in her tracks.
Well, I don't have one.
That's also so beautiful because you're traveling the world right now.
All I know is I'm coming to Canada June 1st. Then I fly to Sicily July 15th. And after that, I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing.
And that's the beautiful thing about intention is sometimes that's exactly the right thing.
Actually, no. Yes. You know what my goal is?
What?
The only goal I have is actually to, and this sounds, I wish I could say it better, but I literally want to experience a perpetual feeling of joy. Because I can feel love and I can feel neutrality and I can feel comfort and I can feel ease and all these sort of things. But there's things inside of me that kind of torture me. Like, I struggle when people struggle. I struggle with what goes on in the world sometimes. I still have a very responsible mind that comes in and says, Katrina, you really should fix this and this and this. Like, I believe that we literally should wake up in the morning and be thankful that we're alive, period. Whatever comes in that day is just a gift. This is just simply the things that are coming in. And this is what I believe deeply, that every day we should just wake up with this lightness of being. And this is actually my daily goal, is to sort of think, what's going on? Why am I not joyful today? No matter what courses I'm creating, no matter what books I'm writing, whatever I'm doing, what is it that's pulling me off this absolute lightness of being? Why do I think I'm playing God again? And that actually is probably the one thing that I'm perpetually striving for right now, is to release whatever it is that holds me back from this incredible lightness of being.
What is the one thing you're most consistent with respect to your health?
I think I pursue joy and I relax, because I really believe, I don't worry about food and all that. Because I find that when I'm happy, I'm healthier. And when I'm relaxed, I'm healthier. And when I eat, when I'm happy, I naturally eat foods that nourish me. And when I'm happy, I naturally go for walks because I want to. And if I get too focused on physical things, I just drive myself crazy. And then I remember that I'm going to be dead soon. So what are you thinking?
Such wisdom there. What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
Badass?
Yeah, this is my stumper. I kind of enjoy the silence that is produced by this question. Yes, badass.
You know what? I actually don't think I am badass. I really am. I don't think I am. I'm spontaneous, and people think I'm crazy. Like, maybe living out of a suitcase is badass, but I actually genuinely, you know when I'm the most badass?
When?
Totally in bed.
There we go. As I was asking the question, I was like, I hope she goes there. And then you went there. It's amazing.
You know, the funny thing is I actually giggle about this because I actually am so looking forward to June 1st and seeing my dude, because in my life right now, I'm always in perfect balance, right? I'm always full masculine, full feminine, because I'm alone. Mm-hmm. Right? I travel alone, so I'm whole. Right? And this is the point. This is healthy, right? But as soon as I get in vicinity of the dude, I get to be feminine. I get to fully polarize. And the feminine is raw and wild and chaotic. And she gets to just freaking go there. And he is so beautifully stoic and masculine and holds space for me. And he just digs it. And it was actually sort of foundational for when we got together. Because when we got together, I said to him, I said, I'm actually really super happy. So unless you want to play the masculine side of this polarity, I really don't need anyone. And so it was actually foundational to our entire relationship that he had to always play masculine because I'm just not interested in anything else. And so I get there, and when we make love, I just get to just give her for all I'm worth in the heavens above, like just wild. And the wilder I get, the more entertained he is. And then the wilder I get, and oh God, I look forward to that so much.
And there we have it. The definition of badass. Last question for you, Katrina. Entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I think we're born that way.
I like the definitive answer. I love asking this question.
I think not everyone thrives in the experience of being your own boss. I think a lot of people are really great team players and they really work well with other people. And when those people try to become entrepreneurs, it's very lonely and it's very frustrating. It's all about doing what you thrive in. And if you thrive working with a team and you get to go home at 5 o'clock and not worry about what happened or whether there's income coming or how the people are going to get paid, then that's what you should do. Death is coming. I'm just kidding. That's just Mulan talking. It's just like, why would you hurt yourself? You know what I mean? Like you have to do what you love. People who love being the boss, hustle. They thrive. They like being kept up at night, thinking about how they're going to pay the bills and how they're going to pay that person and what the new edge is going to be. Right? I don't think that's everybody on any count. And even what an entrepreneur is very different. Like for me, I'm pretty much a lone wolf because I'm not an entrepreneur like that, because it's more like I'm a creative place. And as soon as I start involving too many people, it's sort of everything becomes a weird committee decision and everything loses its edge. I just know that my calling is to do what I'm doing, and it looks like an entrepreneurship. But that's how I'm made, you know? So I think you're born it. And if you don't really love it and it doesn't feed you and nourish you and make you excited, then we should really look at why you're doing it.
Words of wisdom, Katrina Boss. I could have this conversation for days. I know we've piqued the interest of some of the people hanging out as our listeners. Where can we send them to learn more about what you're up to?
So I have two websites. My main website is katrinaboss.ca. And my other website that hosts all of my online courses is fusiontantra.com. And I have email lists that you can get on that I send out things, and I can be emailed at katrina@katrinaboss.ca. And
we'll hook everybody up. It will all be in the show notes. I know you have rattled the radiant feminine inside of me, and I can't wait for our next conversation. Katrina, get home safely from Guadeloupe, and I can't wait to do this again soon.
Sooner than 96 episodes. Huh?
Right? Thanks, Katrina.
Thanks so much, Megan.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Entrepology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.